Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Once again, back with Peter Burke and Farming Aotearoa. And today I gather, Peter, we are going to be looking in detail at what you believe is one of the many great Māori farms and a winner of the 2018 Ahu Whenua Trophy for the top Māori dairy farm of the year. Welcome, Peter.
Good to be here, Catherine, again, and it's nice to talk about a lovely farm just south of Rotorua at a place called Rerepakaitu, which is it's a lake. Well, the farm is around this lake, Rerepakaitu, which actually is a shallow lake, believe it or not. And it's interesting because Onaku is on land which was somewhat formed by the Mount Tarawera eruption, I think, back in 1880 something or other. And June. And so the farm is a rather beautiful site. But I think what sets it apart in many ways is it's a well-run farm. It's got very good governance. There's a wonderful woman there called Moira Bramley. She's an elderly lady, and she's been up till recently the chair of that. And she is just absolutely quite a fantastic, real matriarch, lovely, smart individual. And they've got one of the best CEOs that I've ever met around a Māori farm, a woman called Angela Whakawera. Angela's, again, lovely, again, smart, and they're big. So to put you in the picture, they've got land investments worth about, I don't know, somewhere around 2,000 hectares of land. They've got four dairy farms, but three of those are cow farms or bovine farms, and the other one's ovine, which is sheep. And the reason they switched to sheep is to reduce the environmental footprint on their land.
Okay.
So they're very strong on the environmental side, and that's quite impressive for them. And I think that's what's one of the things that sets them apart. They've never just stood still since they won the award. They've kept on moving. And when you go back there to see the operation, and I've been back a few times since, there's always progress in that place. And that's just a sign of good governance, good management, good vision, all those sort of things. And the other thing they've got, so they've got dry stock farm as well. They've got, you know, they have dry stock as well.
Dry stock, sorry?
That's just grazing cattle, basically.
Okay.
So they graze cattle there. Stock off their own dairy farms, they'll put on that to winter off. They can do that. They've got forestry. They've got some of the lands retired as well. So for ecological purposes, they've put some land aside for that. But the other interesting thing they've got involved in is honey.
Honey has been popping up a lot lately, actually.
It has, and they've set up their own operation there, and they're exporting honey, which is quite amazing. So, you know, I think that sort of sets it apart for me, that they've got all these different components all working in tandem and together. And I think, you know, that's a really an example of what a farm should be these days, what a big operation is. It's diversified, so they've got dry stock, they've got dairy, they've got sheep milking, they've got honey. So if things go wrong in one area, there's a pick-me-up in the other area as well.
Yeah, so it could be not only ecological, but also, you know, what is happening fiscally.
Yeah.
But so can I just take you back then to the honey? Does this mean that they have planted especially for the bees?
Yeah, they've got that. They've planted the honey at their own plant, set up their own operation there for that specifically, and it's grown incredibly well.
Do you know what sort of plants they've put in?
I think it's kainuku, I think, mainly.
Okay.
I think just the fact they've done that shows that they're seeing the value of diversifying.
Yeah.
They've also got a software company as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a operation.
Yeah.
Which you go past and think, well, what's this, just a little dairy farm? No, not really. It's actually a very big operation.
So where is this farm? Did you say
it's
that?
It's Rerepakaitu, which is about 20k south of Rotorua.
So it's pretty local to us here.
It is local. Not far away. And, I mean, I knew Rerepakaitu quite well because I lived up there for a while. And tried to put a canoe out there, and it's great for canoeing on the lake. But there's a lot of dairy farms around that area, and there's some very... It's a very good area where all the farmers, Māori and Pākehā, have combined to make sure that lake is clean. It's lovely. It's a lovely, beautiful little lake, say shallow, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Also, Lake Rotamahana is around there too. And you can see, when you go up on the tops of their farm, you can see Mount Tarawera, of course. Obviously, it's in the background there. So it's a historic farm, but it's also come into the modern day. And I think that's really quite impressive to me that what they've done with their with your operation. And as an example to other Māori and to ordinary pakeha farmers to say, okay, don't just stick with the one thing. Years ago, there was a lot of talk about diversification. It was a big word that was used back 30 years ago. Now someone's just gone to the dictionary and found it again. and like, oh, diversification, yes, I remember that. That's a great word. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And you are seeing that. And you're seeing that with some blocks. I know some other Māori blocks up in Eastern Bay of Plenty, for example, where they've got a dairy farm and it's suitable for kiwi fruit growing. So they've actually put in a crop of, they've put in a few hectares of kiwi fruit as well. Again, just this little safeguard to say, okay, if one goes down, we've got a bit of, we've got something in the bag which can, we can bring out if things don't go perhaps the way they might expect them to go. So that's the beauty of it.
Do you know what I love, and I think that's fantastic, putting the kiwi fruit in as well, but what I love is when you're talking about the honey, that just shows that we have, you know, need respect for the land, because you have to grow food for the bees, which must also be good for the soil. So that's sort of, it's all feeding each other on that.
It is. I think this issue of diversification is quite interesting. Actually, I had a discussion a couple of weeks ago with a gentleman from the European Union. He's the Director General of Agriculture. He happened to be in New Zealand. And we were talking about diversification and sustainability particularly. He's saying, well, how do you define sustainability? Now, there's a lot of discussion around what is sustainability. And everyone has their own view of it. He said, okay, here's an example of it. Who is the most sustainable? The European farmer who has his cows, their cows, her cows, in a barn and contains in there and controls the greenhouse gas emissions? Or is it the extensive farmer who has a wide, have their farm extensively, where they look after the biodiversity? So there are two sides to that, and I don't think anyone's really yet come up with an answer. And I know that what I see around talking to people is no one really can define sustainability in a specific way. The issue is a lot of people are saying now, well, okay, this topic has been discussed in New Zealand, obviously. It has been discussed in Europe. And it's important that, one gentleman was telling me yesterday, in fact, that it's important that we become part of that discussion in Europe, because what Europe decides may be what they'll impose on New Zealand. So we've got to be clearly up with the play as to what's going on in the rest of the world. We can't just say, oh, we're sustainable in New Zealand, that's fine. No, because if we export to Europe or the United States or wherever we might export to, we've got to meet their sustainability requirements too. And are they the same as ours, or is there going to be a world standard for sustainability? I don't know. I don't think anyone knows at the moment. But there is a lot of talk around what it is and what it isn't. And it's a funny word, which, you know, it's like environmentally friendly. What the hell does that mean? I don't know.
Probably means different things to different people, doesn't it?
It means some people can do the minimum and some will do the maximum.
Yeah.
And what is right and what is wrong. And it's also something that you would look at the environment in which people are operating. I mean, in New Zealand, for example, what's right in one region may not be right in another region. So we've got to be very careful. You can't even do it country by country. You've got to look at catchment by catchment to say what is, that's good in that area, but it doesn't fit in that area.
Do you know what it is? I think across the board, though, no plastic.
No, there isn't. And the interesting thing,
get rid of plastic.
One of the beautiful things for me is, like, take the West Coast, okay, the Western Milk Products is the dairy company that runs in Okatika. It collects milk from Fox Glacier right up to Karamea. Now, in that, you've got incredible climates. You've got 3 metres of rain in Fox. You've got a drought potentially in Karamea. You've got irrigation in the Grey Valley. You wouldn't believe it, that the West Coast runs out of water. Doesn't have enough rain. They've got to put irrigators in. So you've got the climatic differences in New Zealand alone, just in one area of the country.
Yeah, massive.
They go from 3 metres of rain to nothing, to 100, 1,000 mils. It's quite different.
All right, so I'm going to bring you now to what the issues are specifically for New Zealand of the day.
Well, I think the big issue at the moment is everyone's waiting to see what the new incoming government will bring,
okay,
whether Winston and David and Christopher can conjure up. But more importantly, how that will impact around the agricultural scene, which is my interest in particular. So I'll make one statement now, which I think is probably correct, is that I don't think National will give away the agricultural portfolio to one of the coalition partners. It's too important for them, and they've got farmers in their caucus, so therefore I believe they'll hold on to that portfolio. They won't dish it out to New Zealand First or ACT, despite what those groups might like. There's a lot of talk about what, if they did that, would they pull something to one side and it may be that they'll put what we call undersecretaries or ministers outside cabinet to look after something, such as potentially food safety, maybe animal welfare. There has been talk about horticulture going outside. I don't believe that will happen. If it does go to anyone, it will go to someone in the National Party, not someone in the coalition of partners, because horticulture is the big future for New Zealand. There's no doubt about that. It's coming up and up, despite what's happened in Tairāwhiti and in Hawke's Bay, and I don't think they'll give that up. So what we're going through at the moment is an interesting period of time. It happens every 3 years. It's this, you know, hormonal rush every 3 years that gets into government. It's called the BIM time. Now,
the BIM time.
The BIM time. It's not the bin, it's the BIM. Okay. And the BIMs don't go in the bin, by the way.
Okay. So tell me, what is a BIM?
A BIM is called a briefing to the incoming minister.
Okay.
It's a formal document put together by every government department. Every government department is required to put in a BIM. And that is a document. It'll vary in size, but it will give the new incoming minister a full briefing on what the department does, who is in it, what it does, what they've been doing, what they think they should be doing, what their strategy has been, etc., etc., etc. And those documents are quite important because they do give an idea of where things are. Now, particularly when you've got a change of government, a department would, in a normal situation, no change of government, they would have written something which would be more, okay, this is what you've done and this is what we think we should continue to do. Whereas this time they can be a bit cheeky and say, well, actually, they've done this in the past, but we think there's an opportunity to do this. So there is that little bit of opportunity. We don't know what those will be yet, but they will be released. They're public documents, so they will come out.
They'll be public, okay.
They will be public. They will come out. They generally are released en masse. I suspect they won't be till the new year because the ministers will take these home over Christmas and read them thoroughly and ask some questions and probably meet them with their own staff. But what is happening, which I find really interesting at the moment, from my perspective, is that not only are the government agencies doing it, but the other industry groups are doing the same thing. They're writing what you might call their own BIMs or their own requests to what they think the government needs to act upon in the first 100 days of office. And there's some themes coming through in that at the moment. Regulation is obviously a big one. There has been concern ongoing from the farming sector about the regulatory framework that Labor created and the speed at which they push that through. And there's demands for a pause on that to stop it. They're not saying they want to change the direction of travel in terms of the environment. Yes, they want to go ahead. They realise that's part of the deal, but it's how you do it. The other thing that's interestingly coming through from a couple I've spoken to so far is that they've said in the past the government agencies themselves have not coordinated their regulatory work very well together. And I can vouch for that, having worked in government. You'll put a paper up, it'll go to five different departments and come back and you'll look, did I write that or not?
Oh, I see.
It gets
so changed. Many hands.
So many hands. Hand means hands make a muddle. But the question is that if one department puts out something, have they really consulted and got their head around what are taken into account in the final analysis, what impact that will have on the farmer? And in many cases, what you're getting at the moment, or we've been getting, is regulations which sound good, but in fact are impractical. And one of the things that's the comment that was made to me the other day was by someone high up in the sector, I want practical, pragmatic solutions. I want a roadmap of what the government wants to do. I don't want to have this ad hoc silo approach which has been going on for the last number of years. Let's give us some certainty. We're on board with you if you can do that, but also understand that don't be supportive of us. Now, there's a difference in, if you look at New Zealand and look at, say, Ireland, there's a great difference in how they approach these things. In New Zealand, we've been very prescriptive around regulation. We've said, this is the law, you will do it this way. In Ireland, there's been a different approach, which I think is a much better one, and I think that we'll pick up here soon, is the government going along to farms and saying, I think we have a problem here about this. What do you think is the best way of solving this? And giving some of that responsibility for solving it on back onto the farmer. As a result, they're getting buy-in. You know, when you put a regulation in place, someone wants to find a way around it.
Yeah, it's like being told what to do. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we heard that? I mean, I'm the same. Yeah. You know, tell me what to do and I'll say, yeah, well, that's great. But I'll go and do something the opposite. Yeah. Give me 5 minutes to do it, to work it out, and I'll do it.
Just because. Yeah.
So that's the period. So it's an interesting period of time for us. And I think we've got a situation at the moment where, in terms of the sheep meat industry, the sheep meat prices are low. We're going through a very poor cycle at the moment. Prices worldwide, there's a glut of lamb, of sheep meat on the market caused by a number of factors. The Chinese market has not picked up in the way that people thought it might be post-COVID. Our good old mates, the underarm gentlemen from across the ditch, are liquidating their sheep flock. So they're putting extra lamb on the market at lower prices. And I'd call that what I call that's commodity lamb as opposed to lamb cuts, but that's causing the price to drop. And there is a discrepancy between supply and demand at the moment. So the prices New Zealand farmers are getting is lower, and we've got a bigger problem emerging because in New Zealand at the moment this year has been a very mild winter. So up in the places like Tairāwhiti, where it's a big sheep country, the lamb survival rate's been higher than normal. There are more lambs around this year. They're doing well, but the price is poor.
Right.
And that means that farmers who are already facing high on-farm inflation, like the on-farm inflation in New Zealand is around 16 or 17%, the urban is about 7%. There's a big difference there. That's because of costs like fuel, fertilizer, labor, all sorts of things are coming into that mix as well. And that's a big issue. And just on that issue of labor, there's a big issue there about a lot of criticism of the Department of Immigration being slow in processing visas for overseas workers. Some companies are telling me they're waiting 3 or 4 months just to get these cleared, and that's a problem for them because they're trying to say, okay, we've got so many lambs, so many things coming through, we need so many workers, do we know we're going to get these or not? And I think the government departments have been, frankly, pretty poor. There needs to be some, you know, when you hear Seymour saying, let's sort this out, he's right, probably, because some of them have been sloppy, and I think they've caused some of the damage that's caused around farming by simply being incompetent, I think is the best way of putting it.
Has this been going on for a few years,
yes, it has.
Since COVID? Because it was a sort of started with nursing a little bit, did it?
COVID's been a problem, and I think everything changed. The whole game changed with COVID.
Mm.
But we have been slow to get in workers to do work, both in the horticultural area and particularly in the meat industry processing-wise, because we use a lot of overseas workers for meat processing. And the interesting thing is that I heard the other day that the offer was made by the previous government to the meat industry to say, well, we'll give you the same scheme that the horticulture have, which is lovely, except that horticulture runs for about 7 months of the year. The meat industry runs for 12 months. So you can't have a scheme that doesn't fit. And there's I hate to say it, but some of the people in the government department haven't gone beyond Johnsonville in their lives. Sadly, and don't know what happens on a farm. I'm not sure they know if a cow's got 4 or 2 teats. But, you know, that's the problem. Someone once said, I had one of my staff once who wrote a note to Richard Preble's office when he was something or other and said, your staff wouldn't know the difference between a crypt, wouldn't know what a crypt orchid was. You'd think it's a plant in your office. Actually not, it's a sheep that's had something done to its important crown jewels, which are not broadcastable. But anyway.
We digress.
We digress. Sorry, I've done a sidebar there.
You did. I like it. Can I, before we go back on to what we were talking about with the uncertainty and volatility of the market, when you were talking about the BIMs before, is it unusual for the industry to essentially do their own BIM or put a paper together for an incoming government? Is this a new thing? Pardon my ignorance.
It's probably something I've always done.
Okay.
I think what we're seeing now is a more formal approach to this because and if you put something in front of a minister, then they can't ignore it. So it will go in with their Christmas reading, and they'll get to know it. I'm sure that if you say, and I'm making an assumption here, that Todd McClay is going to be the Minister of Agriculture, which is highly likely, then Todd will know a lot of these issues as well. I'm not sure he's not unaware of them.
Mm.
But at least what they're doing is saying, they're saying two things. One is, Minister, look at this, but also they're saying to their constituent members, we have put this up to the minister, so you can't say we didn't do it. So it's a bit of ass covering there as well, as it is telling the minister what to do.
Okay, so when you mentioned before that the incoming government would be hanging on to, or National essentially would be hanging on to the portfolio themselves, it would be dangerous, is that what, in your opinion, if they palmed it off?
I think it's too important because what we're seeing now in the newly elected National Party is a lot more farmers have come into Parliament than have been before. Up till now, they haven't had very many in there. Although, interestingly, the National Party, of course, was the Farmers' Party. That's where it comes from.
Okay.
It's a Farmers' Party. But also because the rural constituency is seen as something that they want to that they want to control. I mean, a few years ago, Labor took off a large slice of the, I think it was in 2017, Labor really wrestled away a lot of those national, so-called national seats from the National Party in rural areas. Now, they've been reclaimed, and I think they'll stay there for a while, quite frankly. And National will do everything it can to retain that rural constituency because it's important to them. And also, from an economic point of view, trade is going to be big. We're going to see a time, new period emerge probably where we'll see more trade agreements put together, hopefully. India is one, obviously one, but a challenging one. But the comment that was made the other day was that despite all these trade agreements and what they offer, New Zealand still gets penalised to the tune of about $1 billion a year through non-tariff trade agreements. So there are still some things out there which need to be redressed. And I believe the beef and lamb particularly are saying we want trade and trade policy to be a high priority for you as a department, which as a government, which means that certain departments such as the Ministry for Foreign Affairs and Trade will still be very, very important to the equation. Where I see the changes coming in and cutting back and staffing, if it's going to be, will be in places like the Ministry for the Environment, probably, and maybe MB. I can't see Ministry for the Environment standing up and having the same numbers of people ongoing. I think that will change. MPI, I think, will have to remain because it's important. It's too big a game. I mean, MPI and MFAT are joined at the hip in many ways as our NZ Trade and Enterprise. They're not going to change because they're pivotal to the economy, but others will. They'll be looked at them, and I think we'll see some changes around that. I don't know. I'm not going to guess that, otherwise I get into trouble.
Yeah, well, no, that's right, and it will be recorded here. So
the minute you start to set yourself as an expert, someone always knows more than you do, so you'll learn to say, well, I think that's the case, but you don't ever commit to it like, you know, what you should do.
You mentioned the environment there before as far as the ministry was concerned. Is there any – what's ongoing with that?
Well, I think that the issue is really there's just so much legislation. There's a tsunami of legislation coming across farmers at the moment. There are things like farm plans, which farmers are being asked to complete by the end of next year. And it's causing mayhem at the moment because it's a big ask for people to do. And what is happening is that district councils and regional councils are requiring these, and they're all setting different parameters. So,
well, that's not very helpful.
No, it's pretty stupid. And I mean, I was a great fan of regional councils. I actually worked for one. In fact, worked for two of them. I thought they were a good idea when they came out. I think now they're a disaster, quite frankly. They have not delivered what they should have done. They're uncoordinated, like the rest of government departments. And I think that's the trouble, that you might have a farm that's in split between two regions, and there may be different laws for one half of your farm and different laws for the other half. It's like being in Ireland where half of your farm is in the north and half is in the south. Who do you pay tax to?
Yeah,
but that's tricky. And it's and that's where I think there's a real problem that some of these ideologically driven ideas sound lovely. They probably get you an A at university, but they don't get you an A on the farm. They get
not
you
not practical.
They get you a dunce in the corner job, you know.
Right.
Because they're just not practical.
Yeah.
And I think we are seeing now that so many people coming into some of these jobs, while they're well equipped academically, they haven't spent the time on the farm to see how that solution plays out. And you've got to have both. You've got to have the academic, you know, qualities, but you've also got to have the practicality as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You must be able to see the bigger picture and also be able to see what practically can be done, so you're not destroying what you're trying to create at the same time.
I hear what people are saying. I just love sitting on the fence in a way, which is a lovely job of a journalist. You can sit on the fence and hear everything coming to you and say, well, I think that's right, maybe that's wrong, but then I don't know because I don't know the detail. And it's easy for a journalist to think that they know things, but they don't. Our best guess is to ask questions and let the other people tell their story and then let people make up their mind as to what they think is right and wrong. Yeah. That's what I want to do anyway.
So, Peter Burke, are we going to see you before Christmas? I don't know.
You probably will. Yeah, I'll be back for the last show.
Okay.
The last gig, I'll do one more. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming.
It'll be
today.
On reindeer.
On deer farming.
Deer farming, yes. Okay. You might do it.
All right then.
All right.
See you, Peter.
See you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air. local radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.